And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. Welcome back in. It's hour four of Morning Drive here on this Tuesday, ESPN 102.5, the game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you, taking you up until 10 o'clock. Chris Mason at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we welcome in Jimmy Dykes, ESPN college basketball analyst, who did the Vols and Bama game this past Saturday on ESPN. Jimmy, good morning. We appreciate a couple of minutes. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm headed your way. I've got the Vols again tomorrow night against Vanderbilt. Mm. The last time Tennessee was ranked number one going into Vanderbilt, I did the game with Brad Nessler, and it turned out quite a night for Vanderbilt. So, but this is a very good Tennessee team, as you guys know.
You think the Vols fans know that you did the last game, and they're wishing, like, man, why do you have to do this game again?
That's on them if they think that.
Oh, no, Dykes has the call again.
Jimmy, let me take you back to when he was hired, because I'm fascinated by his evolution. Obviously, listen, he's at Clemson, he comes to Texas, and he wins a bunch of games, but sort of viewed as an underachiever at Texas. Recruited very, very high-level players, Kevin Durant, T.J. Ford, on and on. But sort of viewed as a little bit of an underachiever, had just gotten fired. I think Tennessee, the state of the program was like this massive calamity with all the previous coaches and, you know, bring back Bruce and all this stuff. I think people thought he would stabilize the program, but I don't think anybody anticipated this type of rebuild from him. Just how unexpected is the run that they're on this year and last year with Rick Barnes when you go back to how you viewed the hire when he was brought on, you know, 5 years ago?
Well, I probably have a different view of it because I'm deep in the weeds with these guys, and I knew that Texas's loss was going to be Tennessee's gain because the guy just continues at Texas, went to every NCAA tournament for the most part, and that is so hard to do, and fan bases get spoiled by that, and that's so difficult. And you look at those two programs where they've gone since Rick left Texas, where that program has gone and where Tennessee's program has gone, and I'm not surprised. I'm a little surprised how quickly he's done it because he built it around, as we all know, just guys that want to be coached, want to be driven. They weren't, you know, in that top 100 EYBL circuit in the summer. They weren't catered to during the recruiting process. And he's been so true to who he is, Coach Barnes, over the years in recruiting. This hasn't changed. I was with him last week. We're talking about Tennessee's ability now to get into the door of five-star guys. And he said, it doesn't even phase us. We go after guys that fit our culture and our belief and our personality and our DNA. And if they have two stars, that's great. If they have four stars, that's great. It doesn't matter. And that's why that program is so stable. He didn't just strike gold because of guys that he inherited and they had a couple of good years. That program is as solid of a program as there is in the SEC right now.
Now, looking at this team, and I've been able to watch the top four or five teams, most notably the Wolverines this past weekend, and I wasn't too impressed, even though I think that they are well coached. Looking at UT, are they, if it's not Duke, are they definitively the best team in the country beside Duke, based upon what you've seen, the depth on this team and their coaching?
Yes, I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, because I guess two weeks ago, I had Florida State at Virginia on a Saturday, and then I forget who it was at Tennessee 3 days later. And I walked out of both of those arenas thinking those are the two best teams in the country. And I still believe it. I'm still very strong on Virginia. I mean, they lost by two in Cameron Indoor. And I know Duke didn't have Trey Jones, but they still got the best two players in college basketball on one team, and it came down to a single possession. And I think Tennessee and Virginia right now, to me, on a neutral floor, would be the two most difficult teams to beat. I think Duke is right there behind them. I think Michigan and Michigan State are right there behind those three. And then you open it up to teams like Gonzaga. Kentucky is really coming on. Kansas is still capable. Texas Tech still capable. It's kind of a handful of those teams. North Carolina, when they're tough and defend, they're capable of being one of those teams we look at. But going into tomorrow night's game, and I'll say it again like I did Saturday, the best team in college basketball tonight is the Tennessee Volunteers. But that can change. It can change so quickly with a bad half or a bad game. And honestly, Tennessee, two out of the last three halves of basketball that they played, their last half against Arkansas and their last half the other day against Alabama, have not been good. It's not been the good version of Tennessee. And I'm sure Rick has their attention heading into that game tomorrow night at Vanderbilt.
Jimmy Dykes is joining us here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Jimmy, you look at the top 11 in the AP, and you see the Carolinas, the Kentuckys, Michigan State, and Duke. You look at the Blue Bloods, and then you have some of the teams, whether it's Tennessee or Michigan or Nevada. Do you feel like right now we're at a point in college basketball where you can make the case that the one-and-done five-star guy is the way to go and win a national title that way, but there's also an equal argument for the teams that go about it where they have guys with seniority, juniors and seniors, upperclassmen, more of that team-oriented, not the lottery pick type player in the draft? Does it feel like there's an even balance right now as to who could actually win this whole thing when we get to March?
Yeah, yes, it's extremely balanced. And since the NBA age limit came into effect, there's only been two teams that have started one-and-done guys that won the national title. Continues to be a sport that old wins. And our last three national champions, you look at Villanova twice in North Carolina, all those lineups were dominated by upperclassmen, redshirt juniors, juniors, and seniors. And that's why I'm still hesitant on Duke. I don't know when it gets down to those every possession counts on a neutral floor and they're not in Cameron Indoor. How are they going to respond in some situations that only experience can kind of get you through? And that's right. Why right now I like Tennessee, I like Virginia, I like Michigan State, Cassius Winston and Nick Ward. Those are older guys on really well coached teams. That's why I still like Kentucky in the SEC. They got, for their sake, you know, they got some older guys because they have sophomores and Reed Travis. So. But you never don't take a kid that, as you're recruiting him, you think he may only be here 1 year. I don't think there's I just don't think there's any coach out there that would say, you know what, I know you want to come here, but I'm not going to take you because yeah. I think you'll only be on our campus 1 year. I mean, why would you still not take the very best players you can possibly get and just kind of, you know, try to surround them with veteran kids?
Let's fast forward to March, and Tennessee fans are looking at a bracket, and Tennessee's in the tournament, and they're making a deep run. What is it that you would point to that would be their undoing? I mean, I know Duke has four lottery picks, so let's take that off the table. What is it that could get them beat late in the tournament, Elite Eight, Sweet 16, Final Four? What is it? What is it that Tennessee fans? Because right now it's all hunky dory, it's all, you know, roses, and everybody's great. What is it that you'd be concerned about if you're on Rick Barnes' coaching staff, and you're playing in that tournament? What is it that could be their undoing late in the tournament?
Well, they don't have any one area that I say that's how you can beat Tennessee. So I would answer that question by the same way I would answer if you're asking the same question about Duke or Virginia or Michigan or Nevada or whoever could end up there. Can they stay healthy? Because that's a huge thing when you get to March. Are you healthy? Do you have all your guys? Do you have your best team available to put on the floor? Does your best team stay on the floor? You don't want to have in a close ball game, Grant Williams can't be on the bench with 4 minutes to go when he's fouled out. And that's happened a couple of times this year. I still think Tennessee, like every other team in college basketball, they're vulnerable just guarding the ball and not getting beat off the bounce. That's not just Tennessee. That's everyone. Every team right now that I watch play, they just have breakdowns on just not staying in front of the ball. So, but in terms of when you break down their film, when you talk to coaches in the SEC about Tennessee, no one right now has the formula to beat Tennessee. It's not like you say, shrink your defense and make them make threes, or pressure them and see if they can drive by you, or just keep on going down the list. That formula is not out there yet. They check all the boxes in terms of how to win games in different styles. They can mismatch you. They can play fast. They can play slow. they're one of those teams in college ball right now that's right there in the top 20, both offensive and defensive efficiencies. And that to me is about as good of a sign of a well-rounded team as you have.
Now, every so often you get you a transcendent player. You know, the most notable one, obviously LeBron James. He didn't go to college, went straight to the NBA. You could say Anthony Davis was one of those players. Now we have Zion Williams. Scottie Pippen, the Hall of Famer, comes out and said, well, Zion, he's shown enough that he's going to be the number one player. He should just shut it down. Is that something that you would prescribe to, or is that setting a bad precedent moving forward if indeed Zion chooses to say, you know what, I've proven enough. I don't want to risk injury. I'm going to sit it out for the remainder of the season. I don't think he will do that. I don't think he doesn't come off as that type of kid. But when you start hearing guys that have played at the highest level, guys that are Hall of Famers, start to spew out stuff like that, do you think that's a good thing?
No, not at all. I mean, we all have our opinion on careers and those type of things. Here's my issue with that. And I scouted in the NBA for 3 years before I started working for ESPN, and I'm pretty deep into how those guys think. That would be a big red flag to me if Zion Williamson did that and I have top pick, because you're getting an insight to me on how that kid's wired. And he's not like that. This is a team guy that wants to win, and he has a terrific love for the game. And when you say, you know what, there's 7 weeks to go and I'm stepping away from my team because I'm more concerned about me than anything else in this world, that's a red flag to me in those NBA general manager offices and when they start breaking down what's going on. So that would be my argument back for anyone that considers that you have to also consider how this could possibly kind of gray an area on your resume in terms of how people look at you. And that's how I look at it. Other people might say that's crazy. He's still the best player and the best talent and is going to change the league. Maybe he will. Maybe he will. But I just know that there are a lot of NBA franchises out there that they understand the importance of team and your personality traits and all those things and how critical those are to building an organization. And that's how I would look at it.
Jimmy Dykes, ESPN college basketball analyst. He had the Vols and Bama on Saturday. He has Vols and Vandy tomorrow night on ESPN. Good stuff, Jimmy. We appreciate it. We'll certainly be watching.
Okay, guys. Have a good day. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Jimmy Dykes. When we come back, we will continue that Zion Williamson discussion. We'll play you the audio from Scottie Pippen, and we'll get into that. But right now is your chance to win a pair of tickets to go to the Tennessee Boat and Fishing Expo at the Wilson County Expo Center from Friday, February 1st. To Sunday, February 3rd. All you have to do right now, just be caller 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 5, you're going to go to the Tennessee Boat and Fishing Expo. Morning Drive rolls on after this on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think he's definitely going to be the number one pick. I mean, I think he's done enough for basketball, college basketball, that it's more about him personally now. And I think for him as a young player that I would shut it down.
Now I would
stop playing because I feel that he could risk a major injury that could really hurt his career.
That was Scottie Pippen on ESPN's Get Up talking about Duke star Zion Williamson, and it basically said, you know what, I've done enough. I would shut it down mid-season freshman year to get ready for the NBA. And I'm actually in agreement with Jimmy Dykes. I think that would be a major, major red flag.
Yeah.
I'm all cool with it. If you skip a bowl game, cool. But if you quit mid-season, that's an issue.
That's setting a bad precedent for, you know, for the sport in itself. It would send a red flag to me because what if said kid is in the last year of a deal? Is he going to fake an injury so he doesn't finish out the season?
But what if he's at the end of his rookie contract in the NBA?
Uh-huh.
41 games in, he's averaging 28 points a game.
And
I've already showed I'm worthy of a max deal. and then I shut it down.
Yeah, my hamstring. Oh, I can't go. Or my ankle. Oh, I can't go. That's setting a
don't they
a
do that every night in the NBA?
Bad precedent. And I don't even understand why Scotty would say that. Man, you want these kids to go out there and play hard and physical. It's when you don't play hard and physical is when more than likely you get injured. Now, you're going to get some freak injuries that happen. But if you're not going 100% and somebody else is, then you're going to get injured. Zion doesn't seem like that player. It seems like he loves playing basketball.
I'm worried about the people guarding him.
Yeah, he has fun out there playing.
Dude's a monster.
So to throw out there, well, he should sit out, you know, because he's proven enough. He would be the same person that if Zion chooses to do that, and like you said, he gets in the NBA, and he's at the end of his rookie deal, and he wants that max contract, and he sits out, and his team's on a playoff run. He sits out. Scottie Pippen would be the same person that said, oh, he don't need – what is he doing? He needs to be a team. Well, Scottie, 3 years ago you said he should.
Yeah,
and now you're saying he shouldn't? Come on, which one is it?
I think we've
it's
got
just setting a bad precedent. I don't like
if
it.
If he had a knee issue right now and was hurt – and
I can understand.
And there's a long way coming back, and there's risk of re-injury, and we're not really sure. You know, Kyrie Irving went through that, right, and then came back in the tournament and had a really big-time tournament. This is the Nick Bosa thing, right? Like, Nick Bosa mm-hmm. left Ohio State because he was concerned. A, he didn't know if the injury was going to be fully healed by the time the season was over, and could he play in meaningful games? He wasn't sure because the timetable on that injury, which is a very, very risky injury, I believe a double groin pull, which just sounds awful. I think sitting on a bowl game, clearly, and I get in this argument with my in-laws all the time because they're all like, well, why would a player sit out a bowl game? And I go, it clearly hasn't affected the NFL players because the GMs don't care because Christian McCaffrey I want to say it was Solomon Thomas sat out a bowl game and Leonard Fournette sat out a bowl game, and they're all going to get drafted highly. Half of the first round this year will have sat out a bowl game. I don't think NFL GMs, they don't view this as a red flag because that's the line, right? Mm-hmm. Fans are like, oh, if I was a GM, I wouldn't draft him, to which I say that's why you're not an NFL GM. And it doesn't matter. Bowl games are one thing. If a player sat out the last month of a college football season while his team was still competing, and especially in this case with Duke, because they are the number one or best team in America when he's out there, you're giving up on your teammates and you're not competing for a championship. And that competitive drive is clearly a part of the evaluation process. You know, Derek, everyone in the NFL underestimated your competitive drive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why, like, they just looked at your height and said, oh, that's not going to cut it. They didn't know deep down inside, I'm driven by a lot more than just my size. Like,
exactly.
There's a competitive drive issue. And Jimmy said sort of that's a window into who he is, Zion Williamson, should he do that? I think there's a huge difference between sitting out meaningful when you're healthy, sitting out meaningful games when your team is competing for a championship, and sitting out an exhibition event like a bowl game. I think there's a huge difference. So we have to be able to parse those two things out. I think it's not a good look. Here's the real question, though, boys. If he does sit out, is he not going in the top three or four in the draft?
He's still
going to go.
He's the number one player to me.
Yeah, he's still the number one player.
Now, here's the hottest of hot takes. I wouldn't take him number one. I would take R.J. Barrett. I think Barrett's a better player.
Well, if you think he's a better player, that's fine.
But, again, that's not that hot because Barrett's the number two prospect in the draft. And to take number two at number one shouldn't be that crazy of a hot take. But, again, let's say he sits out tomorrow. He announces, I'm not playing anymore. Mm-hmm. Because, again, he's 285 pounds. He plays very physically. Could he get hurt? Yes. Is that a risk? Yes. Is he 6 months away from a multi-million dollar paycheck that's going to change his life forever? Yes. There is risk involved in all of that. What are the two things that could happen, though? If he sits out, where does he get drafted? Still probably top 5 or 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the worst. If he gets hurt, what happens?
It depends on the severity of the injury.
Let's say it's a shoulder.
He's still the number one, number two pick.
Top 10 at least, right?
Yeah.
Torn ACL, okay.
That might push him down.
So like, there is a risk of it costing him dollars by mm-hmm. playing every day.
I'm
but
all
that's
for
every other professional athlete. They risk that every day.
Yeah, I mean, every time you step on the field, the court, or the ice, you're risking getting hurt. Like, I got this tweet from a guy named Sauce O'Reilly on Twitter. Zion is so clearly an exception to the norm. You and I both know he's all ready to play in the league. He's not a fringe lottery guy. He's a bona fide star. That's worth protecting at all costs. I mean, we all run the risk of getting hurt no matter what we do. Like, where are we going to draw the line?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant was clearly a top pick, and he played all through the NCAA tournament. Well, they only made it a couple of games.
People act as if Rick Barnes we didn't – like, this is the first time we've had a clear, surefire number one pick. That I mean, we've had this before. Yeah. Kids played. It's like, seriously. Anthony Davis was by far the number one pick in the draft. And he is a transcendent player. No one said this about him. Did people act as if Zion Williams is the
– Ben Simmons.
Exactly, Ben Simmons.
Now, he quit going to class.
Yeah, quit going to class.
That's one thing.
Did anybody say, oh, Ben Simmons needs to just sit down? No, this isn't the first time, and this won't be the last time that we have a kid that is just clearly the number one pick in the draft. So let's not make this some, you know, some type of deal where it's just – you know, oh, we'll never see this again, so he needs to sit out. No, we'll see it again. Best believe. We'll see it sooner rather than later.
Whoever the next great guy is.
Let's not make this seem like Zion is just, he's great, but don't sit out.
There's one difference for me with Zion than some of those other guys. I think the risk for injury when you are that size and strength and power, like I think he's carrying too much weight. I think he needs to be 260, not 285. At 6'6", 6'5", I don't think at that weight he can – like his body will last for more than 10 years in the NBA. I think he's going to have to do something about his game because dude is such a monster that it's just you. I am. You're maybe a little bit more worried about this particular player because of the way he's constructed. I mean, when you're 285 pounds on your knees, your back, everything takes. I mean, look at Greg Oden, right? Like if anybody should have sat out, it should have been Greg Oden. That's the guy that should have sat out because he's just a walking injury. So that's the only thing I would add to this is that Zion is a little different because I think people are already questioning his ability to stay healthy at that weight in the NBA, and that is maybe why this is even a conversation. I'm with you guys. It would not be the advice I would give him because you're competing for a national championship right now.
Chris Mason's going to join us when we come back. I'm going to sit that interview out. I'm going to shut it down in fear of cramps. I can't afford to cramp up in the final 30 minutes of the show.
Got to save the voice.
So, you guys, I got to protect my future, protect my financial responsibilities. You guys handle Mason, and I'll return for the big finish. Morning Drive continues next.
So Derek Mason just gave a recommendation to Zion Williamson. And not everybody in life has a Derek Mason in their life. I'm lucky enough I have a Derek Mason in my life, and Derek Mason gives me television recommendations all the time because he knows me and he knows what I like. So he's like, hey, Braden, you need to watch this documentary or you need to watch this show. And I realize that not everyone has a Derek Mason. This is where you need Xfinity. Because if you don't have a Derek Mason in your life, you need Xfinity. Because Xfinity knows you the way Derek knows me, and Xfinity knows what you like. So it'll give you recommendations. All you got to do is use your little X1 voice remote there. You pop on. You can ask for recommendations based on actors and actresses you like, based on other TV shows you like. It'll know that you've watched this show, and this show, and it'll say, you know what? I think you might like this one. And if it's on Netflix, they'll find it for you. If it's on Amazon, Xfinity will find it for you. If it's on demand, Xfinity will find it for you. The Xfinity X1 voice remote and the X1 package will make recommendations for you. Derek gives me recommendations. Xfinity gives me recommendations. I got the best of both worlds. Not everybody's got a Derek Mason, so you need to get Xfinity. Call 1-800-XFINITY, go to Xfinity.com, or pop into an Xfinity store today for more details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mace, and the Constable. Taking up until 10 o'clock. The big finish coming up at 9:45. Right now, we welcome in Preds TV analyst Chris Mason. C-Mace, what's going on, man? How are you?
What's going on, guys? I just, when you said the Constable there, it just made me laugh at that that thread we had going the other day about the nickname and all the etiquette and all that kind of stuff.
You know what's funny about that, too, is the evolution of the Constable. I think of all the people that do enjoy it, I think Chris Mason likes it the most.
Oh, my God. I love it. It cracks me up.
Do you like the nickname better than Chase McCabe himself, actually? That's the question.
Well, it is. It's and then on top of it, like I'm loving like the motivational tweets too. Like today, if you had a bad Monday, it's not too early because you could start anew. And it just gets me fired up. I'm like, man, I'm gonna get this day going right here. The Constable
I'm just waiting for Lavi to invite me in for the pregame speech.
I was gonna say, Mace, the way the Preds played yesterday, they might have been reading McCabe's Constable Twitter account yesterday, because that was a desperately needed performance. Pecorine stands on his head for most of the game, but the rest of the team seemed to play with a different vibe yesterday, and it showed.
I think it did. I think, you know, I think the first period, the Avs came out flying. They just, you know, they're coming off a 7-1 win. They just lit up the Kings. So obviously their confidence is high in that. And Pekka was awesome in the first period. Made a ton of good saves on their top guys and really gave the guys a chance to get their legs under them and get going. And then I thought the second half of the game, I don't know if I'd say the Preds have been too opportunistic other than that Washington game last week at home. But this game they were. I thought they did a good job of really kind of flipping the script. I think a lot of teams have got opportunities on the Preds on transition, waiting for them to be aggressive and then going back the other way and getting chances. And I thought the Preds did a really good job of defending after the first period and then going back and getting offense that way. And then they scored on their opportunities. And then the third period was just a perfect textbook way how to shut down a team when you got the lead. They got nothing. You know, and then that they kept that big line off the score sheet. So, all in all, it was a really good, really solid game in terms of just everybody contributing. Pekka doing his thing in the first, letting the guys get going, and then once they did, I thought they played the game they had to.
Mace, let's talk a little bit about Peter Laviolette. He got career win 600 yesterday. He downplayed it. He said all the politically correct things. You know, great players, great coaching staffs, multiple organizations he's been a part of. But Chris Mason, Peter Laviolette, win 600, you fill in the blank. What does it mean to you? Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I know what he's saying because, you know, at any player or coach, then they get a personal, I mean, you know, 600 is a number. I think it's something when he's has time to sit back and reflect on how big that number is in terms of the 20th coach in the history of the game, only the second American. I mean, that's a historical figure that he just accomplished. But he's such a focused guy. He's such a deflector of praise and all those types of things. But the thing that with Laviolette that I've really, you know, since working with the team and being around him and his family, you know, it's not, and I don't know if is D-Mace there too?
He is here. Right,
yeah.
Here.
When you talk to other players, you know, and you, that's when you get the real scoop on the coach. You ask about, hey, what's this guy like, and what's this guy like, and these guys that I played with, guys that I'm, you know, getting to know now that are on the team, they genuinely love Peter Laviolette. They're just in awe at the way his ability to motivate them. It's not an easy thing when you're with somebody for 4 years straight, and every day you have to come in and you've got to motivate the same group of guys, and you have to have a different message, and you can't do the same thing over and over again. And you got to know when to come in hard, and you got to know when to back off. And they all just say they've never seen anything like it. So I just have the utmost respect for him in that regard of being able to bring the best out of the players. And he's just an awesome guy all around, and he's got an amazing wife and family. So I can see why he gets the success, has had the success that he has.
But does a lot of that also entails you have to have that veteran leadership or that one guy or two guys in the locker room that can help relay that message when maybe, just maybe, the coach tends to, I mean, you've been in it for, you were in it for a long time, and not all nights that coaches, regardless of what he says, he's going to get the best out of you, because it goes in one ear and out the other. It's kind of like your kids. But if, you know, you have someone else within a locker room, one of those veteran guys that kind of relays that message to you, you tend to receive it a little bit different. So is it very important that they have that veteran, one or two guys that can relay that message when Lavi isn't, you know, coming in and screaming a yellow or giving that, you know, inspirational speech?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is one of the most important things to, as a coach, to get the trust and build that strong relationship with your leadership group, you know, however many guys that are part of that or your captains or so when you come in and as a coach and you're going to, you know, you can't be everybody's best friend. You got to say things, obviously, that are going to maybe hurt some feelings and, you know, rub people the wrong way or whatever. You're trying to, you know, get the message across, whatever it may be. But when that coach walks out of the locker room, the strength inside that locker room. You need those guys to step up, and you know, when he walks out, they have Lavi's back. You know, they're reinforcing that message and the whole philosophy of the team, and you know, that's how you get, I think, you get the most. And the Nashville, I think, has done that for many years, is they've got the best out of the groups that they've had. And I think, you know, just the way that these guys talk about Peter Laviolette, there's definitely that element to it, of the leaders, you know, supporting him because of, you know, the trust and the way that he's handled all these players, including them in the process, having conversations with them, including them in some decisions, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of things. He just built such strong relationships with his leadership core that they do exactly that. When he walks out of that room, they got his back, and that message is what they all believe. So I just think it's such an amazing ability to, you know, to be able to have that effectiveness after, you know, so many years.
Mace, real quickly, I know this team has been very inconsistent, some of that due to injuries, some of that just due to inconsistency over the last month or so. They go on a hot streak, they go on a cold streak. They performed very well yesterday in a critical situation on the road in the division. Now they take on Vegas before the break. How important is it? I know it's just one game, but how important is it to have that good taste in your mouth, that good vibe, two good games going into a break? Does it have any impact on how you play coming out of the break at all?
Well, I think it does. You know, there is a long break, but I just think, you know, the way it has gone, like you said, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster here lately, and starting to get the guys back healthy, and then, you know, you have a couple clunkers at home. But I think after, you know, to be able to build on that last game, which I was worried about, to be honest. I'm sure a lot of people were, just the way the last two home games went, and you don't have Ryan Johansson, you're going up against you know, the Colorado team that's very capable of putting a beating on somebody if you're not ready to go. And I think if they could follow this up with another good game, that's a great way to go in the break. And you come out feeling, you know, you come back, maybe get a couple bodies. I don't know if Salamaki or Turris exactly how close they are, but, you know, obviously more time, you're getting closer. I think that would be a great way to start that unofficial second half of the season.
Mace, good stuff. I know you're a big fan of the Constable, so I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Coming up soon, we're going to be launching a Constable cardio circuit. So
yes.
I know you're big on the road. You want to stay in shape. Life's tough right now. So we'll clue you in on the program, and we'll tip you off to
it. It's the McCabe makeover, Chris.
Yeah, I hope there's like lots of motivational stuff. That's where I just you know, he's just in deep thought, and then he comes out with these. They just get me going. I just love it.
So here's the real story. The McCabe makeover 2019. Derek Mason will take him to get dressed and then take him out to dinner in like a fancy place in the Gulch. I'm going to get him dressed one night, take him out to East Nashville. Nick's going to get him dressed one night, and we'll see how well he does.
Wow. I love this. This is a great idea. Sign me up. I'll be a subscriber already.
You can have a night too, Mason. If you want to get him dressed up in how you see fit and then take him out, you can be a part of this.
There you go.
That'd be awesome.
I'm in.
Part of the workout is going to be bag chucking.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, upper body's a big thing. Good stuff, Mason. We appreciate it, buddy.
Okay, thanks.
You got it. Chris Mason, the Constable's number one fan, joining us here on Morning Drive. All right, when we come back, it's time for the big finish on ESPN 102.5 A Game. Yes, indeed, it is time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 here on Morning Drive. We give you the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. What we learned on today's festivities, as well as on tap tonight. So, Constable McCabe, let's get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. Hey, it's Smashel. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive off and running here on this Tuesday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. Oh, we got a good show today. Predators are rolling, a new number one in college basketball, and an offensive coordinator has landed in Nashville. All of that today.
I like one game turns into a roll for the Predators. They didn't suck, all right.
They are on a roll, people.
We are back.
As we welcome in our resident general manager, co-host of Jared and the GM, the great Floyd Reese.
You know, continuity is a good thing. You know, don't get me wrong. But... you know, if you go out and hire really good coaches, they're going to get hired away from you. You know, you're going to lose them. That's part of the game. And I think everybody understands that. Now, How often do you hire a first-year offensive coordinator that ends up the head coach at Green Bay Packers? Now, that doesn't happen a great deal, but it does happen, and I think you prepare yourself for that. I don't think that in any way, shape, or form limits who you hire next. You know, I think you hire a coordinator expecting him to be there as long as he's a coordinator. If you hire a really good coordinator, let's face it, it's going to be a matter of a year or two before he gets a shot at being a head coach someplace.
All of that is paramount. That's what he's going to get paid to do, and that's how he'll be judged. But in the event I purchase something and FedEx brings the box and it comes damaged, can I go to Arthur Smith and, you know, bitch and moan about it and say, you know what, I need this taken back?
Since he has probably connections. Can.
Because I'll go to St. Thomas Sports Bar and be like, hey, Arthur, I'm not really worried about the tight end right now. This packet is a little damaged.
Hey, Arthur, come here for a second. I don't want to ask you about the tight end or what you're going to call. Hey, my box was messed up,
so
man.
You're going to go to a press conference. And the Titans come off a big win. Yeah. You know, next year, week three, they beat somebody good, right? And the offense lights it up. Derrick Henry has a big game. Marcus plays really efficient football. They don't have to punt one time. A lot of great things to talk about in that press conference. Mm-hmm. And you go up there and you go, Coach Smith, this package was damaged. Can you talk to Daddy for me?
Yeah.
And get this taken care of?
Don't tempt me.
How do you think that'll go?
You know, I could switch to UPS. You know, I've got options.
Yes, a bunch of them.
Yeah. U.S. Postal Service.
Look, there is nothing worse than a messed up box, so you got to get that fixed.
Exactly, I took a picture of one the other day.
Did you?
One showed up. It was so bad. And I took a picture of it. I was like, I need to keep this for evidence.
Yeah.
Because like half the box, half the side was gone. It was just tape. Like the cardboard was just gone. I could reach my hand into the box. I'm like, what? This is not how you ship things. And it is kind of, there's a little extra juice to the Colorado thing. And what's cool about hockey is you have to have that postseason interaction. Once you have that postseason interaction, you can start to see the sort of the foundation of rivalry start to build.
So sign you up again this spring for.
No, I love. What do you mean stop it?
Sign you up for Colorado Winnipeg back to back.
I don't want to hear every time they play a team in the playoffs. Oh, rivalries, buddy. No, here we go.
What's all negative Nancy back there?
Well, I'm just saying.
Division games can be. I mean,
why can't I just make everything as big and as important as I want it to be?
Isn't every team in the AFC South kind of a rival to the Titans?
Yeah. The players circle division games, and you know that.
I understand that. But,
who poured windshield wiper fluid in your coffee?
Constable.
What's wrong with you?
But it's
what's
like,
your product leaking?
You know, the St. Louis a few years ago. No, I'm not happy with it today. But St. Louis a few years ago. Oh, here we go. They've been in the same division since the Predators got into the league.
Right, but they had never played St. Louis when they played that series. They'd never played St. Louis in the postseason.
Hey, I just don't want to water down rivalries.
I don't want to water down either, but hockey. What's cool about hockey playoffs in the NHL is that once you get the same team for 7 games over a 2-week period of time, it is natural for foundational animosity to be built. And that is what's fun about. I think this is a fun thing, and you're pouring a cold bucket of water on me.
Think about the Jofa line up against Rantanen, Landeskog, and MacKinnon. I mean, that's best on.
I am fully aroused about this rivalry, and you are trying to turn me off. I don't like it.
Sounds like a personal problem. Yeah. But if they meet in the playoffs again this year, okay. If Winnipeg, which we think will happen, all right. But, like, Anaheim, that's a rivalry. They've met in the playoffs 3 times, and they've beat the crap out of each other.
Did I suggest that it was on the same level as the Blackhawks or the Ducks?
I did
was quote Charlie Blackman, and he said, listen, it's a budding rivalry, and I'm excited to be a part of the game.
Sponsored by Dick Redden. Okay? Tommy.
Is this coffee
not
talk?
Not Tommy.
Is this like, is this like Linda SNL?
Yeah.
No,
park the car in the Harvard Yard.
Stick with the pros.
Coffee.
New England. Like New England, they're pros. Stick with the pros, okay? At Decorating Den, when you're ready to decorate your office, home, or outdoor spaces, or even if you want to go decorate Tommy's house, you can, okay?
I think Giselle handles that.
Decorating Den can do that, too. So, Tommy, if you're listening, call Dick Redding Den and request a complimentary appointment, Tommy, okay? Okay? Online at www.decoratingden.com. Even for you, Tommy, it's free. F-R-E-E. Free. Free, Tommy.
You're stupid.
Like, I don't even know how you follow
well
that
said,
up.
Constable.
So I'm just glad that Chase has to do that.
I wow.
But what if you like work at Foot Locker where you're dressed like a referee and you go in for a free eye exam?
Oh, by the way, your boy in New York. Oh my God, ripping on the refs for changing jerseys with Todd Gurley yesterday.
Oh yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh, so he thought it was real.
Oh,
didn't
he thought Francesa thought it was real, and I'm just on Twitter. I'm on Twitter just like,
Francesa, what's up with him, man?
How can you be so factually
How
incorrect?
Do I become that?
All the time.
How do I become him?
It's very, I've got the blueprint. Start in the late 80s when there was no standard for sports radio.
And be completely out of touch.
Be completely out of touch. Be wrong with everything you say and be an ignorant you-know-what and you'll be number one.
And not care at all about what anyone listening or in your life has to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They make millions of dollars doing it.
Yep. There you go.
Goodbye.
And there you go, the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. We do it as part of the Big Finish every day.
That decorating didn't read.
I love it.
Are you out of like voices and characters?
Clearly not.
Nah, I probably got a few more.
Clearly not. That one came out of nowhere.
I think you should try and sing it.
That was a new one.
Got a few more.
Oh.
Wow.
Do you ever feel awkward doing it?
Like, no. Why?
I'm just wondering.
I'm not sure D-Mace has ever felt awkward doing anything.
Like you and like the inner monologue of yourself, like, did I really just do that?
No, maybe his inner monologue is, damn, I look good. That's it. That's all he hears.
Stick. Okay, I'm going to go in for tomorrow.
Yeah. You got about 23 hours. We'll do it again. All right, Chase, let's get to what we learned today.
Now, what we learned today.
So I learned this, partially today. I confirmed it today, but I learned it over the last couple of days. There's not a bigger Constable fan than one Chris Mason. I mean, anytime there's Constable chatter on Twitter, C-Mace soaks it in.
I learned a few things. First of all, I learned that we are all relatively concerned about the Titans offensive coordinator hire. I am more optimistic than you two fellas. I also learned that Charlie Blackmon does not, in fact, play for the Nashville Predators. I learned
Thank
that
you for
today.
Clearing that up.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I thought the Colorado Rockies bearded outfielder was actually a Nashville Predator.
Well, I was actually just told during the break that Charlie Blackmon and Sonny Dykes are having lunch together today.
Charlie Blackmon's going to the Reds? That'd be a huge get.
Yeah. Him and Sonny Dykes. It's going to be huge.
Is he good on penalty kill?
I have something to say. I'm just going to keep it to myself. It'll get us in trouble.
Please
let's
do
not
it.
Do that. No, let's not do that.
This one, I tell you
no,
up
no,
there.
No.
I tell you up there.
Don't say anything about Charlie Blackmon. Nice.
Oh, my goodness. What I've learned today, that we're awesome.
I've learned today that Derek was unprepared for what I learned
well
today.
Well said.
He's already thinking of his next
we're awesome.
His next decorating den alteration of how he reads the sponsor.
Like,
I've learned that
you guys,
I have several different, I'm like the, what's the movie, the Glass movie, but the one guy.
Oh, yeah, that
the,
movie.
The changed personalities. It's like a superhero now movie. It's called Glass.
Oh,
where
okay.
It's Samuel Jackson.
Is
in it. But
is that
the one guy, yes, the new one. But they made the movie about him where he changed personalities. And he was really, really strong.
I told you guys that I
forgot what it's called.
All you need is Xfinity or Derek Mason, and that will. It'll give you all the recommendations you need.
All right, that's going to do it for a Tuesday. We're back at it tomorrow. Final Preds game of the season before the All-Star break as they take on Vegas. We'll get you set for that as they go into the break. We're going to go on break for a couple of hours. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6.
Bailey DJ Nashville, I love you and stay safe.